Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
When you talk about some of the greatest professional football teams of all time, there's no doubt the 1948 Cleveland Browns of the AAFC are in that realm and definitely in that consideration. Well, we have a collector, Jeff Payne, who's been with us before. He's got some great history and great pieces of his collection of the 48 Browns. Jeff's coming up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another evening in addition where we get to talk about a great collection and some pieces from yesteryear in football. Jeff Payne from the VFC is here once again to share some of his collected pieces and tell us a little bit of history. Jeff, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Great to be here, Darren. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, Jeff, you have... coming from an era that maybe some of the listeners and viewers may remember. You and I certainly don't, but I've heard a lot of great stories about it. But maybe you could give us a little bit backdrop of what you're going to be sharing tonight, because this is a pretty interesting team.
Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about the 1948 Cleveland Browns. And just as some backdrop, you know, since the NFL started in, you know, 1920, there's only been one team. We all know who they are that were undefeated and untied in a season. That was the 72 Dolphins. They just, you know, they just celebrated their 50th anniversary of that season just, you know, just a year or two ago. But I did caveat that with undefeated and untied, because there are actually three other teams in the NFL history that ended a year undefeated. And that was the 1922 Canton Bulldogs, 1923 Canton Bulldogs, and the 1929 Green Bay Packers, but they all had at least one tie that season. So they are not undefeated and untied. Of course, people get tired of me correcting when they say, oh, the Dolphins are the only undefeated team in NFL history. It's like, No, they are the only undefeated and untied team in NFL history. That is true. Interestingly enough, there's been three teams that did finish the regular season undefeated but lost in the playoffs. We, of course, all know about my beloved Patriots, who blew it royally in 2007. Mm-hmm. They're one of those teams. But the Chicago Bears in 34 and 42 both were undefeated at the end of the regular season, but both lost in the NFL championship game. So they were not able to end the year undefeated and untied like the Dolphins. Now, I was looking around because I was like, where I'm going with the story is that the 1948 Cleveland Browns in the All-American Football Conference, before it merged with the NFL in 1950, did go undefeated and untied in the 1948 season. That was the only season that they pulled that off. And I started to wonder what other teams since 1920 in professional sports or in professional football were undefeated and untied. Well, I know there are some regional teams. I know there was at least one out on the Pacific Coast, you know, in the old, what was it called, the Pacific Coast League or something like that. I know at least one season a team ended undefeated in that, but that was a regional, you know, team. There was one team in the CFL that coincidentally, in 1948, the Calgary Stampeders finished the regular season undefeated, but they had a tie in the playoffs. Now, I don't even want to get into how you can have a tie in the playoffs, but that's the way they do it up there.
Leave it to the Canadians.
They got some crazy
it
stuff.
It had to
up
be
there.
That damn rouge.
Yeah. So they did end undefeated, but they did have a tie. They were the only team in the CFL to come close to being undefeated and untied. I didn't find any of the various AFLs. You know, there's been four or five All-American football, or American football leagues through the history, since the NFL started. I didn't see any teams that went undefeated in any of those leagues. Of course, USFL, WFL, none of those. You know, XFL, none of those.
Well, there were some undefeated teams in the XFL, but they only had like two games those seasons.
Before they went out of business or something. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this past year was the 75th anniversary of the 1948 Cleveland Browns going undefeated and untied. And I did not hear one peep from pro football or from the Hall of Fame or from the NFL or from anybody about this team. I don't know what you think about that, but I think that's just kind of annoying, quite honestly.
Yeah. I think some of it was thought of as being an inferior league until the Browns, when the Browns and the Niners and the Colts came over in the NFL and the Browns, won the NFL championship their first year in.
Yeah.
But so that gave them a little bit more credibility. But I think people were thinking of it like the first three versions of the AFL that had happened before that were really, they were not competitive to what the NFL teams were bringing out. But
And that's the general, when you hear people push back on why they don't get more acclaim, it's usually that, right? The first blush is, well, the AFC wasn't anywhere near as competitive with the NFL. I would tend to disagree with that. First of all, I would say one of the things that the AFC had going for it, that even the American Football League in the 60s did not have going for it, was it started right after World War II, and they had access to a lot of players coming back from the war. These were not just, the AFL really had to fight to get their rosters. And I remember reading about the first draft, and, it was basically just a complete crapshoot. And of course, you didn't even know if you were going to get the player you drafted, because the NFL would come calling, business would come calling, and it seemed to me, just in reading about the All-American Football Conference, is the owners of the AAFC really took advantage of all these players coming back from the war. These players were tied to their team in the NFL, right? Now, they signed contracts year over year, so they didn't have a contract necessarily coming out of the war, but they weren't allowed to go to any other NFL team, right? That was the rule, right? You had to stick with your team. Kind of a reserve clause at that point, like they had in baseball. But that didn't stop these players from going to another league, All-American Football Conference, Canadian Football League, others. And the AAFC pulled in some good talent coming out of the war, and they also did a great job recruiting at the colleges, during the war years. And, I know classic story is Paul Brown. Of course, he was the founder of the Browns. Well, he was the coach of the Browns and general manager of the Browns. He wasn't the owner originally of the Browns. But he tracked Otto Graham down in the service, signed him to a deal that would pay Otto Graham while he was in the service to come and play football for the Browns after he got out of the service. He invested in Otto Graham.
Yeah.
That's a crazy thing. And apparently that was something that was being done for the Stars. The AFC were going after stars or people they thought were going to be really good. And the owners were putting money up. And in fact, Otto Graham apparently joked that he was like, I was kind of hoping the war wouldn't end because I was making more money between the military, my military pay and my Browns pay. And I wasn't getting like sacked every, I wasn't getting rushed by these big behemoths every day. He said it was a pretty good life, being in the military. He's like, I was hoping the war would go for a while.
Right now, I think the story went that, you know, Paul Brown before the war was the head coach of Ohio State, won a national championship with Ohio State. Yeah. I mean, I think the only coach I know of that won a high school national championship, college national championship, and a professional multiple championship. So that's pretty big deal there. But Brown, Graham opposed the Ohio State. I forget where he went, to Purdue or one of the Big Ten teams.
He went to Northwestern.
Northwestern. Yeah. That's right. And he was a pain in Brown's ass.
Absolutely. He was.
Bluntly. And, you know, Brown said, I got to have this guy on my team. And when he had the opportunity, that's why I think, you know, he made the arrangements to do that and pay him during the military.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he pulled in a lot, you know, Paul Brown pulled in lots of talent. He pulled some of the Ohio State players in, you know, Bill Willis. We'll talk about Bill Willis in a bit, you know, Hall of Famer and all time great Brown. You know, he really recruited, but he wasn't the only one that did that. You probably heard the story about Elroy Hirsch, who, if I'm remembering it correctly, he, I believe, signed a contract with both the NFL and the AFC. And they had some dispute about this.
That's why he had crazy legs. He was going everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. That's why he was running so fast. I believe that was Hirsch. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No,
but
I think I believe
he did that. It was the Chicago team for the All-American Football Conference, the Rockets, and they changed their name to the Hornets, is where he played for a bit in the AFC. And I think it went to court. Somehow, some way, this ended up in a dispute. And he did end up in the AFC. So there was lots of fighting for the good players coming out. So I actually believe, I mean, the AFC was only around for 4 years. If you look at the talent coming out of the war, you look at what the Browns did when they got to the NFL, and, you know, the 49ers did pretty well in the NFL as well. 49ers were a good team coming out of the gate. And the irony was, is that the some of the other best teams didn't go to the NFL because the NFL didn't want them. It was in a market that they already had a team or whatever. And so, you know, some of the best teams got dropped. The Buffalo Bills got dropped. Mm-hmm. The Los Angeles Dons got dropped. They were both strong teams that always did well. I would argue that the first 4 years, the only 4 years of the All-American Football Conference, it is very likely that those teams were stronger than the first 4 years of the American Football Football League, AFL, from 60 to 64.
I think no doubt.
Right? No doubt. I mean, I don't think there's any question. Yet, the NFL, in its infinite wisdom, keeps all the AFL stats and allows the players to keep their AFL stats, but they do not let the AFC players have and maintain their records
from
the AFC.
I understand that. They were both
no
merged.
Sense. It makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, that's crazy. Sit there and think about the perfect situation for the AFC. You know, you talk about having this, you know, a great amount of talented players, mm-hmm. and people may say, well, why is that? Because of war. I mean, we lost people who were in the war. They were getting shot up, wounded, yep. you know, dying for the country. But some of these military bases, you know, not just the Naval Academy and the West Point. I mean, you have, you know, Great Lakes and a bunch of them on the West Coast and all over Texas. They each base had their own basically professional team, and that's where, you know, Paul Brown was at, of course, the Great Lakes Naval Academy up in the Chicago area, mm-hmm. and so they were training for football probably as much as they were training for war, and a lot of them never got shipped off to war because they were great football players,
right.
and they just wanted them to represent. And so this is a great training ground for football.
Yeah, and I think there's a story about George Halas wanting to fight. I believe the story I heard was, you know, he was in World War I, so mm-hmm. it was right around when he was in college, and he enlisted, but they like set him up as like a, you know, a football coach or a, you know, or an athletic trainer or whatever. He had a non-fighting job in World War I. And so what I heard was when World War II broke out, he always regretted that he didn't really feel like he really served his country in World War I, and that the job he had was too cushy when he saw what was happening overseas, right? And so when World War II broke out, you remember he stepped down as head as coach of the Bears,
right.
and gave it to his two assistants and said, "You guys run the team. I'm going to go fight." And he enlisted and insisted that he go to the fronts and be involved in real
battle.
He's
like in his 40s.
He was old.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was old. Greatest man. Generation, man. Those brave guy.
That's for
incredible.
Sure.
Incredible.
Wow.
Well, let's talk about some memorabilia from this era please. And this time frame. There's, I wrote an article for Gridiron Greats magazine. It's probably been, gosh, I don't know, close to maybe even 10 years now, about football cards of the All-American Football Conference, because there's not a lot of them. There aren't a lot of sets that showed, you know, it is also in that period where there weren't a lot of cards being produced because of the war, paper drives, things like that. So you didn't really see, you know, even NFL cards pop back up until 48 when Bowman got, you know, into the game and Topps started getting into it as well. But they were really focused on the NFL, not the All-American Football Conference. So there's not a huge amount of cards out there for the All-American Football Conference. There are, though, a couple of Cleveland Brown sets that are pretty germane to the discussion we're having here. One of my favorites that is really hard to find is the 1948 Cleveland Browns real photo postcards set. It's a postcard back, you know, set, probably team produced. You know, the Browns through the decades did a really good job of always producing team sets, you know, usually bigger photos or premium sets. But in what appears to be 48, some people say it could have been a little earlier than that, could have been a little later. I don't know that anybody knows for sure. But, you know, most of the checklists I've seen kind of put it in 1948. There was a set of, you know, cards put out, postcards. Very small set. I think there's like six in the set or six to known to exist, but you never ever see those. And interestingly enough, of course, since they're so early, these are pre-rookies. It's a pre-rookie for Otto Graham. It's a pre-rookie for Dante Lavelli. It's a pre-rookie for Bill Willis. It's a pre-rookie for Marion Motley. It's a pre-rookie for Max Speedy. Poor Lou Saban, he's the sixth person in the group. He's more famous probably for being a coach than he is for, you know, being a Cleveland Brown. In fact, I didn't even realize until I picked up the set. I had totally forgot that Lou Saban even, you know, played pro football, right? He
right.
Didn't. Although he apparently was a pro bowler at least once, or maybe a all pro once, but he didn't play it, I don't think, hugely long time, got into coaching.
He had a kid that might have been famous for football.
Yeah,
yeah, maybe a
family
little
that, that did all right, you know. Let me show you. See if I can find this card here. I'm going to find Mr. Willis. Where is Mr. Bill? Where is Mr. Bill? Well,
But while you're doing that, you know, that's another great thing that the AAFC did, is it sort of broke that color barrier that was going on in the NFL, and it sort of pushed the NFL into you know, the Kenny Washingtons and the
yes.
Woody Strodes and that. But you know, Bill Willis, Mary Motley are two of those pioneers that really were brave to play pro football, and I'm sure it wasn't a pleasant experience for him, but there he is.
Yeah, these are great
shot.
Images on these shots, right? I mean, look at that. And I love the kind of, you know, the writing on the bottom, the way it's, you know, name is produced, you know, just written out like someone, you know, wrote it out. But there's Bill Willis. And this card is almost a decade earlier than his first mainstream rookie card, right? And it's just a great shot.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody that intense on a, you know, somebody posing you up for an image, because he definitely is, because he doesn't have a helmet on. But, man, he's focused.
Yeah, somebody's running, I think, over there. It might be a cameraman, or I don't know. Somebody is scared to death, because he's looking pretty intimidating there, I would say, right?
But Paul Brown brought out the sandwiches for, you know, the break or something.
Yeah,
but look at the car in the background. That's, I'd love to have that in
There you go.
my garage. That's
Yeah, I'd love to know
spot.
where the practice facility was when they where they were taking these shots. These came up on eBay. All six came up probably almost a decade ago. I had heard of them. I'd never seen them. Somebody on the back of a couple of them, it's written 1948. So somebody they wrote the description properly. It said 48 Cleveland Browns postcards. And I was like, oh, I got to have these. And I've never seen them again. Never seen any of them anywhere. I'm sure they're out there somewhere, but they don't come up.
Yeah. Now this uniform that he has on, is this in the 2023 season, Cleveland had their throwback uniforms with the white helmets and everything. I think it might be this uniform that they're going
That's
back
a good
to,
catch.
Right?
That could be. Yeah, could be.
Not seeing the helmet, it's hard to tell, but
yeah,
in the colors, but definitely looks very familiar.
Yeah, I don't think any of the pictures have anybody have their helmets on? No, they want to show their pretty mug. Here's Otto.
Oh yeah.
So Otto's getting ready. The ball looks a little different than Edgar Allan Poe's ball.
Right, yeah, a little pointier.
Discussion we had. Yeah. So that's the autogram in this set. They all look like this. They're nice poses, and there's some more cars in the back there. Another shot, different direction there.
Yeah.
I love the high tops too. I was just reading about Johnny U and his black high tops. I didn't realize that he'd started doing that because he had an ankle problem. So what I read in Art Donovan's book was that's why he started wearing high tops, because it gave his ankle support. And then he just kind of became known for, the black high tops. It's Johnny U, and he just rolled with it. That's kind of a cool story.
Yeah, well, Otto had to wear them because looks like they didn't cut the grass there at the practice field.
Yeah. Anyway, where's the groundskeeper, right? Man, look at that.
But it looks like the things at the school, high school where you went to, where they tried to, cut the running down at old Fort LaBeouf with
there
Coach
you go.
Sheldon.
Is that what our coach used to do?
Oh yeah, high
some
grass.
Shenanigans. There you go. Well, he was a tricky guy, so wouldn't surprise me at all that he was.
Good man. I just saw him a couple days ago. He's still going.
Very cool. Anyway, so that's the 48 postcard set. Love that set. It's a beautiful set. Another one that I think you'll like is it predates the 48 team, but it has obviously a lot of the players. It's funny if you look at the roster, from 46 through 49 and into the 50s, boy, the Browns were a model of consistency. I mean, they just had such great players and they just played. They stayed. They didn't retire. And, another thing about how, I think the AFC doesn't get enough credit for the strength of their teams is, a lot of people don't realize the Browns, it wasn't a cakewalk for them to win those championships either. I mean, they did have the best record in the league, I believe, all 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
However, they were losing games, and there were a couple years where it was nip and tuck in the AAFC championship game. Not in 48, by the way.
No.
48, the best team was the 49ers, but they were in the same division as the Browns. Browns went undefeated. 49ers, went 12-2. Guess who their two losses were to? The Browns. The other division was a train wreck that year, just the way it worked out. And probably because the one division was so strong, they just beat up on the other division. And I think the Bills and might have been the New York Yankees. No, actually, it was the Colts. It was the only time the Colts made a run in the AFC. They tied. They were both 7-7.
You mean it wasn't the Miami Seahawks?
Yeah, no, they didn't. For some reason, they didn't pop up.
Yeah.
But they had to play a playoff game because they tied. Bills won, and that was like, I don't know, maybe the Colts were like, good for you. Go play those Browns, because the Browns beat them like 56-7 or something. But the year before, in 47, the Browns were losing in the fourth quarter of the AFC championship game to the New York Yankees. Speck Sanders, great running back. He ran for over 1,400 yards 1 year in a in the AFC. I mean, he was a really good player that nobody's ever heard of. He had injury problems. He didn't play that long. But the Browns were down. They were losing. They had to drive length of the field and kick a field goal to win it, or they would have lost that championship. So they had a couple games that were pretty tight. They didn't run away with, you know, that championship every year. I kind of liken it to, if you look at, you know, those next 6 years in the NFL, when the Browns went, you know, they went to the championship all 6 years. They won three. They lost three. I think maybe one of them they got kind of beat up. But the couple they lost, it was nip and tuck. They could have pulled those out. And the couple they won, they could have lost. It was, you know, they were right there with the best in the NFL for a decade, I believe.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, if you look back at they had some close games in the AFC, but they had only four losses in the 4 years in the AFC, and there was none of them in 1948. And two of those losses were to the 49ers. So that's how competitive those two teams were. So kind of a cool stat.
Yeah, and I think they lost who else did they lose to? The Dons. They had trouble with the Dons. I don't know what the Dons had on them. And I think it might have been, you know, they swung through the West Coast and they had to play the Niners and the Dons usually in a row. That must have been a tough one, because the Dons were good. I mean, the Dons, if it weren't for the Cleveland, who was there then? The L.A. Rams were in the – yeah, I guess the L.A. Rams by then were in L.A. and they didn't want another – you know, they didn't want another team in L.A., so they didn't pick up the Dons, but the Dons were good. I still don't understand to this day why they didn't pick up Buffalo, because they didn't have anybody even close. I don't think Art Rooney would have, you know, that was far enough away. I don't think
there was some politics and some business decisions, because, I mean, the Colts weren't that competitive as team as the Buffalo Bills were. And actually I had Ken Crippen from the Football Learning Academy, who's a Buffalo native, and I had Jeffrey Miller and Greg Tranter on. We were talking about Buffalo Bills past, and we talked quite a bit about those AAFC teams and why the whole controversy, why they weren't merged into the NFL with the other three. But it sounds a little bit of politics. They all agreed, the Browns definitely, the 49ers definitely, but, you know, Bills probably should have been that third team.
Yeah, Colts were a bad, horrible decision. That was a nightmare and disaster. And a lot of people don't even realize the Colts of today are not that same team. They are not in the same lineage. That team folded.
Right.
You know, they only played, I think, a year. Was it a year? I think it was a year or 2 years in the NFL, and then they ended up getting shipped out to Dallas, became the Texans for a year. That was a disaster. And then the franchise got sent back to the league. And it wasn't for, I think, a couple of years until the new Colts started up, and they're considered a completely separate franchise.
Yeah, it's that's kind of a shame that what happened in the 80s there when the Colts left and went to Indianapolis, that the Colts name didn't stay in Baltimore, because you had definitely had some precedent set there for that Colts name to belong to Baltimore.
Yeah, and make up your mind, NFL, right? I mean, you do that with the Colts, and then the Browns moved to Baltimore. You didn't let Baltimore keep the Colt name. You let them rename the Browns the Ravens, but you didn't take all their records. They're a new franchise. The Browns get an expansion franchise, but then they get all of Cleveland's records. It makes no sense at all.
I think it was from the fallout of the whole Colts ordeal that they knew. They said, "Well, boy, we messed up here. We can't let that happen again."
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
The other set I wanted to talk about a little bit was in 1946, and this is the first, you know, AAFC football card set that was produced. Sears Corporation, you know, big giant stores, used to be anyway. Put out a small set of Cleveland Brown, you know, just in the regional Cleveland area, that they gave out at their Sears stores. And they were really publishing or promoting the fact that they were the sponsor for the radio broadcast of the Cleveland Browns. And I'll show one of the cards here in a minute. And they all have a little ad for the radio station and for the announcer. And on the back of these cards has the schedule of the 46 schedule of the Browns that year. So.
You know how, what's really amazing about this is, okay, the year before the Browns came in, the Rams were in Cleveland, won the NFL title,
They
and
did.
then moved to LA because part of the reason, because they didn't want to compete against the Browns coming in, but the Browns getting all the support, where you had the world champions of the
Yeah.
NFL just a few months earlier, and playing in your confines of your city. So that's kind of an incredible part of that story too.
It is. It shows you how intimidated the owner of the Rams was with Paul Brown coming in, being an Ohio guy, and there must have been a lot of buzz about it because he did not want to compete. He'd rather go to the West Coast where no team existed, right? They didn't have a team out there at all at that point than to compete with the Browns.
There's
Yeah, no,
no
that
team
was
within
crazy.
like 1500 miles of
I
anyone out
know.
there.
I know, right? Yeah, and all the logistics and the cost of, traveling out there, and he wants to be out there. Oh, okay. You can see why I didn't want the Dons to be there. But yeah, no, you're right. The and Cleveland really picked up the Browns and just ran with it. I mean, they became their team really fast. And I think he was pretty. I heard that the owner of the Rams was pretty disappointed with the turnout. For the playoffs when the Rams did win it, he didn't feel like the city was really behind the Rams either. He was kind of burned. It kind of reminds me of when George Preston Marshall moved the, what was the Redskins out of Boston because he just wasn't feeling that he was getting much love from Boston and hightailed it out of town. Same scenario.
That's just, that's unheard of. That would be, like the Chiefs deciding,
Wow.
hey, we just won the Super Bowl. We're gonna go, we're going back to Dallas. We're gonna become the Texans again,
I know, right?
So.
Well, remember he moved the championship game too that year before he moved the team. They were in the NFL championship and he moved it to New York. He didn't want to play Boston. He was like, they're not going to come. I'm going to move it to New York. Can
Yeah,
you imagine
they
that?
deserve a championship game there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me show you what these cards look like.
Yeah, please.
I'll bring up a couple of them here. So this is just two together.
Oh yeah.
There's Otto Graham and Dante Lavelli. And they're all cut out of sheets. And we know this because there was a find of uncut sheets probably a decade plus ago, maybe 2 decades ago. And I can't recall whether the person who had them worked for Sears, worked for the Browns. This person worked for somebody associated with this promotion and had snagged a bunch of, unused, uncut sheets. And a lot of them came onto the market for a bit. But I'll tell you don't see them anymore. I don't know where they're hiding, but they are not out there. Some collectors I know have the uncut sheet. There's eight in the set. I don't have the uncut sheet. I'd love to have it. So you'll notice these are authentic because they're all hand cut. You will see them get grades, but I've never figured out how or why. There's no dotted lines or anywhere to cut. So it must just be based on size. And did you cut them to the right size or not? I don't know.
You get the old
Because you will see some
guillotine
of them.
paper cutter and use
Yeah.
the little
Yeah.
grid on it.
Yeah.
Seven st Sears stores in a greater Cleveland area.
Can you
Wow,
believe that?
that seems like a big amount.
I don't know if there's seven Sears stores in the United States right now.
I don't
I
think
don't
there
know.
is anymore.
I think they're like totally almost gone, right?
They've
Yeah,
sort
Sears
of,
Roebuck used to be
the
the
internet killed
deal.
them pretty good. Wow.
Yep. And you see the ad for the Browns and Bob Neal. Never heard of Bob Neal, but he was the announcer. WGIR. Certainly no WGAR. AM 1220. It's a
1220.
classic radio station. One thing that happened with this set that was interesting, I mentioned the uncut sheet of eight. And by the way, there's a real nice Frank Gatzke's another Hall of Famer of the Browns, who for some reason Topps just refused and Bowman refused to make a card of him forever. I think his first card's like 55 Bowman or something like that. And he started playing in 46 and he's a Hall of Famer. He's in this set. So,
Nice.
it's nice to, have at least he has a pre-rookie in this set too, kind of like Bill Willis has a pre-rookie in the 48 set. But what but about a decade ago, a collector popped up. I think he first popped I first saw him on Net 54, which is a mostly baseball oriented forum. And he had a ninth card for the Sears set. And he was just like, hey, I got this card. I don't know anything about this, but I don't see it on any checklists. Anybody know anything about this card? Nobody had ever seen it before. Nobody knew anything about it. It didn't seem there didn't seem to be anything else associated with it. Is it another sheet? Was it a promo card? Was it cut out of something? Nobody knows for sure, but this ninth card pops up and it doesn't fit on the sheet. And, I told him, hey, that's really neat. You know, if you end up, deciding you want to sell it at some point, obviously I'd love to, I'd love to.
It seems weirder to be an odd number on a sheet anyway. You'd think it'd be an even number.
Well, yeah, that's what, what everybody was thinking was, there's got to be either this was cut from something else, we just don't know what it is, or there's another sheet out there somewhere that, nobody knows about, right?
Or the poor guy got told, hey, we only had spot for eight. You're going to be on this other card, but we're not going to print very many of them. So sorry, you're out. You're off the sheet.
Something like that, right? Something kind of wacky. Nobody knows for sure. But let me bring up and show you. So ultimately, this gentleman contacted me at some point and he said, hey, this isn't really my thing. I'm not a football guy. This card's really cool, but it's not my thing. Do you want to buy it? And I was like, no, I don't want it. No, I'm just kidding. I said, yeah. He said, of course I want it. Yes. So I acquired it. I wanted to just inspect it, right? I wanted to look at it and see if I could figure out what the heck it was and was it legit or not. And here it is.
Wow. I don't think I've ever heard of that player. Yannick
Horne? He played, but not a star, that's for sure.
It definitely has all the markings of the other ones down in the bottom.
Same exact schedule on the back. The only thing that's different in close inspection is the little logo down at the bottom. The little logo.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the text, the font is slightly different, and the little logo almost looks like dot printed versus lithograph. It just looks like it was produced a little differently. Which makes you wonder if it was part of a program or an ad or something, right? Because it's kind of odd that only one, if there was a second sheet, that only one would ever show up, out there. That's kind of odd.
Now, could these have been maybe like the radio station, like doing them on promos, like,
could be.
One week they do each player and go through the season. Maybe that's what it was. And this was either an early season game they gave this guy out or
it's possible
late season.
Yeah. My understanding was these were distributed through Sears stores. So you had to go to one of the Sears stores and every week they had a different player. Probably the home games or I don't know when they started and ended. My understanding was that they were given out individually at the Sears stores. So Sears must've been cutting up the sheets and giving them out. Or something.
Why don't stores do cool things like that anymore?
Right?
To be able to get the gas stations, you get all kinds of stuff, and you talk your parents into, hey, you got to fill up at Arco because I want the
exactly right or Sunoco, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
Tool? Yeah,
I want the coolest toy or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. What's up with that?
Wow, very cool. This is quite a treat here. Those are pretty neat. Great additions. So you have all nine of them then? Do you have all?
I do.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. Very cool.
Yep. I picked up the set, complete set. I don't know, maybe a decade ago at auction. As mentioned, you just don't see it come up very, very regularly now.
Do you know of anybody else that's ever like has this ninth card? Does that
No.
No? Okay, so that's the only one that you're aware of is that one you have.
I would love it if somebody would pop up and say, "Hey, I got it," or "Hey, I have a 10th one," right? Or something, because it's still a mystery. Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's right here with my Paul Brown card.
Yeah, right. That would be awesome, wouldn't it? That would be great. Yeah. No, I've never run into another one, and I'm just glad the guy didn't want it anymore, because it's kind of cool. I like cool stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, different. Definitely to because you have the other pieces that go with it. So very interesting. Yep. Wow.
Those are my major 48, you know, kind of Cleveland Browns. I have a team photo from the 48 season, their undefeated season. It's really big. I don't have an image of it because I can't figure out how to scan it. Like, my phone doesn't even do it justice. It's huge.
You might have to get like the space station to take a picture of you, laid out in your yard.
And then I've snagged the programs for all four of the AFC championship games. So I have all four of those.
Wow. Those are going to be pretty rare too.
Some come up on at auction somewhat regularly. A couple of them do not. Okay. I was just looking through some of my I bought a whole stack of AFC programs from an auction quite a while ago. It was in a huge lot and nobody wanted it. And I was like, gosh, dang, this is like history here, you know?
Yeah, they probably don't realize what the AFC was.
I know, right? And I never looked through it that closely. I just had it kind of all together and I hadn't really ever unpacked them. And I'm reorganizing my stuff and getting everything in its proper place and whatnot. And I happen to run across this stack of these programs. And one of them is a preseason game. On the West Coast in Washington State, Washington at Gonzaga. Isn't that Washington State, Gonzaga?
I think it is.
Yeah, Oregon or Oregon. Where is it?
It's one of those up in the northwest corner. Yeah.
Ask Joe Squires or somebody lives up there.
Right.
Yeah. And they had this exhibition game up there for the AFC. And it has to be one of the first exhibition games. It's just a two-page, real loose leaf program. And I don't remember buying that. Must have been in that stack.
Who would save a preseason program? I mean, think about it. You know, they're disposable things as it is, but a preseason game.
I know. Yeah. And it's two of the teams that didn't make it too. That's the other thing is it's gotta be, there can't be a lot of them. It probably wasn't well attended.
The Chicago Rockets or the
Chicago
Miami
Rockets. It might even be the Miami Seahawks.
Miami Seahawks. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. It was not two teams that you would think would be playing in Washington State or Oregon or wherever Gonzaga is.
They might have got better attendance there than they did at their home fields because they weren't very good.
I should look up and see if they have any stats on how many people attended those games. I like to do that with the old programs, you know, the real old programs, like the early NFL ones, you know, because I mean, some of the stats, they're just so abysmal that you're like, wow, like how many programs did they sell? I mean, it's a good way to figure out what the pop is for programs is how many people actually came to the game. Was it raining and destroyed most of the programs during the game?
Yeah.
Did people, you know, use them as an umbrella?
People wadding them up and throwing them at the poor play on the field, you know, paper airplanes shooting down.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Very cool stuff, Jeff. That is some great pieces of history there, and an excellent team, one of the best in history of pro football. And sure glad you were able to share it with us. And maybe you'd like, you know, last week you told us a little bit about the VFC and how people would like to, you know, if they'd like to join, you know, to get in contact with me, and I'll get in contact with you. But maybe tell us a little bit about maybe some of the items that in the categories that you have set up on the VFC that maybe be of interest to folks.
We take all collectors at VFC, even though it has the word vintage in its name. You know, I always say that today's modern is tomorrow's vintage. That's my slogan, because if you look at it, right, it's moving. I mean, we have collectors on VFC now that, you know, they grew up collecting in the 90s, in the aughts, right? And now they're coming back into the hobby. to them, that's vintage, right? That's when they were a kid. Just like for us, maybe it's the 80s or the 70s or the 60s or whatever it was. And that's vintage for us. So I'm a big believer that, you know, I don't like when collectors or groups like try to keep certain people out. Like, oh, you know, if you're not interested in this stuff, then, you know, you shouldn't be here, or that's not vintage. You know, vintage is this date. And it's like, nah, vintage changes every year, right? Every year, right. The definition of what's vintage in some people's mind changes. So we have categories all the way from pre-war, you know, 1800s to, you know, before World War II to after World War II to modern stuff. You could argue we could have more categories. It's just, you know, if you get too many, it's just too hard to navigate and keep track of. So we kind of keep it to those eras. But then we also have a kind of a catch-all, you know, anything to do, because some things transcend different eras, right? Like some discussions transcend. Maybe it's about a team. Maybe it's about the Green Bay Packers. Well, you could post anything in a thread on the Green Bay Packers, and it could be, you know, could be pre-war, could be post-war, could be modern, whatever. So you might decide to put it in that category. We do have a buy-sell trade for members to, you know, kind of trade things. And one thing I like about VFC is there's a lot of sharing that goes on. People gift things to each other or send things to each other, you know, just acts of kindness and helping other collectors. As you know, we do a Secret Santa every year and exchange stuff. That's always fun. We do have one. We have a, originally we did not have a social, like a non-football category. Because I was kind of like, well, this is a football freaking forum, you know, we should be talking about football. But, you know, the members kind of, you know, their perspective was, hey, this is a community. This is a place we come to talk and have fellowship. And, you know, yeah, we talk about football, but, you know, there's other things we'd like to talk about, too. And we want to talk to each other. And it's like, oh, that's fair. So we started a just called social chatter or something like that. And it's about any topic you want. With two exceptions. There's two, as you know, there's two things you cannot talk about on VFC.
And they're both powder kegs.
And religion. You cannot talk about them. And I think the members have been very good about not jumping into those waters. I haven't had to do a lot of nudging or moderating to keep it clean. I think people are respectful. And realize we're here to talk about football. That's what this is about. It's our safe haven. Let's keep it like that. So I think people are pretty good about it. And then we do have one kind of like, you know, anything around football topics, what's going on. We talk about the playoffs. We talk about the season. We talk about teams. We talk about coaches. You know, we do all that kind of stuff in a category as well.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting items that comes up is like when somebody gets a piece in their collection and maybe it's an older piece and it's a photograph and they're like, hey, I got this postcard. I don't know what team it is. And you see these research hats going on. You could almost hear the clicking of keys and the newspaper.coms and everything. I know like our mutual friend, Timothy P. Brown, he loves that. He loves going back and
drills into it.
Start seeing all that history come out and as the hours go by and, you know, you read that thread like a day later and like, oh my God, you know everything about this guy, you know, or this team.
I know. I think that's called like Unsolved Mysteries or something. That thread. I love that thread.
Yeah.
Because you know, if you post something in there, there's somebody that is going to figure out what it is.
There's some gridiron CSI going on in there.
Gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah, what it does is just preserving the history of this forgotten team that, you know, nobody's heard of. I mean, a lot of times it's a team you never heard of, you know, it's like a industrial team or something that, you know, played, you know, 100 years ago, and just cool stuff. And the community is so great about doing that and preserving the history of these guys that played. So very cool.
And I've started, you know, just making sure I'm annotating everything that I have in albums, everything I have wherever. Because once I figure out what it is, I don't want that to get lost, you know?
Right, yeah. Like
100%. Because if nobody knows what something is, they're more likely to throw it away, you know? And so I want to make sure I remember and you know, those in the future remember what it is so it doesn't get lost to time. Because there's so much stuff on eBay comes up every day. It's some, you know, football team, and it's posted, and you look at it and you're like, I have no idea who this team is. Like, well, maybe high school. I don't know. And that's lost the time.
7,500 years from now, somebody's going to be looking at one of your pieces and have it in their collection and say, hey, thank God this guy did this and put some information down, or we wouldn't know what it was, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
Except for Bill Willis being written in the bottom of developed. Very exactly. Cool. Well, Jeff, we really appreciate you coming on, sharing this great team from the 1940s, the Cleveland Browns, a little bit of the backstory of the AAFC and the forward story of it, and the Browns' successes, and Paul Brown and Willis and Mary Motley and Otto Graham, and sharing the pieces that you have of their memorabilia and preserving that history. So thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Darren. I really had fun. It was great.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, it's found right here on the Sports History Network.